Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Thank you for taking the time to sit down and talk to us today, Craig. Really, really appreciate it. And just to kick us off, could you please introduce yourself to our audience at Label Sessions and what you're best known for, perhaps?
My name is Craig DeLarge, and thanks for the invitation to participate in this recording today. I'm a digital mental health researcher and strategist with the Digital Mental Health Project. And I'm also a leadership development trainer and facilitator. And I like to tell people that my career mantras are about improving health and developing leaders.
You have a clear focus on digital mental health and its landscape, but also orchestrate organizational change. And let's focus first on the tech literacy for the well-being side. Why do you think that this is something that isn't focused on so much? And everyone seems to be talking about digital bricks, but not how much to use tech to enhance well-being.
This is going to sound cynical, so bear with me. We live in a system that very much focuses on using technology as a way of enabling workers and consumers. When you think about how we use technology, it's largely to work, to communicate, to be entertained, to consume, to shop. I think that as a society, that's where we have focused our use of the technology, and how we can use the technology to improve our health has been a bit behind. We did a good job of creating a demand for mental health services, but then we found, now we're finding that we have an undersupply of resources to actually address that demand. This then is an opportunity for technology, whether we're using it, whether it's being used by doctors and provider organizations, or, and this is the even bigger opportunity, whether it's being used by we as citizens and users of the technology itself, both for the purposes of getting healing where we have become out of balance, but I would say even more so for the use of prevention and wellness so that we can take care of ourselves. When you look at and you consider how this discussion is progressing, for better or for worse, it comes back to consumers and workers. So that even when you go to business and you say you should make an investment in the use of these technologies for these purposes, very often when you're rationalizing why that investment should be made, it's around, well, mental illness, mental unwellness is threatening your workers' capacity to be productive. Oh, we sit up and pay attention to that, right? Or it is damaging your ability to have shoppers who buy your goods. And then we pay attention to that. I sure hope that a generation from now, we have a socioeconomic system that is motivated to take action short of that kind of reasoning. But, you know, we have to deal with what we have today. And a lot of it is around, how are we going to be better shoppers and better consumers? And then that's where we want to invest. And that's whether you're talking about business or governments, unfortunately. So we got to work with what we have. Yeah. But it's a huge opportunity, and one that I'm constantly thinking about and looking for ways to collaborate with people in the ecosystem about how we can better drive that.
To delve into it a little bit more, would you be able to share some specific examples of how digital advancements can revolutionize our approach to well-being, both individually and collectively?
When we think about how technology can support health, there are typically four functions where we see the most effect. Technology can help us to accelerate education of all types, right? It can give us the opportunity to practice and to improve our skills. It can provide us with social support, where we recognize that very few changes in health behavior happen outside of me having people who encourage me and who hold me accountable to keep up the behavior over time. And then the fourth one is measurement, that I, when I measure my change in behavior and the effect that that's having on my health outcomes, then that allows me to be, to stay with it because I'm getting better, or it catches me slacking off, in which case I can recommit. So now think about those four functions, okay? So when you think about those four functions and how technology fits into that, here's some examples. Social media, when used skillfully, can actually provide a lot of help and support. Being in communities of people that are working on improving their health. And by the way, I should have mentioned, when we talk about improving our health, a useful model is the five pillars. You ever heard of the five pillars of health? So we know that our health is improved when we sleep better, when we eat better, when we move, and I like to say movement versus exercise because I hate exercise, when we have good social relationships and skillfulness in how we relate to ourselves and others, and when we're able to relax, when we know how to calm and soothe our distress, right, and our being over our emotional regulation, okay? So social media, when used skillfully, can definitely give us social support that helps us with those five pillars. When you think about apps like Lose It and Fitness Pal, which help with caloric management. So I'm able to watch, what am I eating? What are the number of calories and the amount of nutrients? I can track that over time, right? This is an app that I've used for a number of years, and that has very much helped me with staying healthy in terms of the food that I consume. Another example, virtual reality. So I don't know if you own any Meta Quest lenses yet, but virtual reality as a technology has played a significant role in administering exposure therapy as a way of addressing post-traumatic stress disorder. This is where, you know, traditionally exposure therapy, you'd have to take the person and put them back in the situation where they experienced trauma so that through repeated exposure, they could regulate their emotions and process what happened to me. Virtual reality, you can put a person back into that scenario much more easily and cost-effectively. So that's been a very interesting use of that technology. Conversational chatbots like Wobot or Visa can be very useful in administering cognitive behavioral therapy in a situation where there's just one person and the robot on their phone, and there's not another human being there to assist. I know very many people are skeptical of this. I can tell you that from personal experience, I have very much benefited from conversational chatbots. There's also the additional benefit of anonymity. So as we know, there's a lot of stigma around mental imbalance. Many of the technologies that are being used in this space are giving people the opportunity to get education, practice, maybe not as much social support, but certainly degrees of measurement in situations where they feel shame or vulnerability. They actually don't want another human being to know because they don't want to judge, but yet they can still get help and assistance. The next one is YouTube channels. So everything you want to know is on YouTube, right? But how often do we think about, along with, again, entertainment, work, shopping, how much do we use YouTube and TikTok as a way of actually educating ourselves and becoming a part of supportive communities? But that's digital technology with tons of resources. But I don't know as many people as I would like who actually build that into their day-to-day upkeep and their health. And then probably the most prominent one that we hear about the news is teletherapy and telepeer support has grown probably fastest in this space, largely driven by the fact that governments reimburse for it. Follow the money, right? Whatever the government is going to pay for is going to grow the fastest. But teletherapy has been extremely helpful in allowing human beings to connect across distance. and thus has made therapy available to people who are in rural areas, people who don't have transportation, people who, again, want to be more anonymous and not have their whole communities know that they're struggling. Hopefully we'll have a future where that's going to be less the case. But today, those are all examples of how technology is being leveraged as we speak. And there are many other applications, but those are the ones that come most obviously to mind, and which I will say are most prominent in my own lifestyle and how I take care of my health.
The one that really stuck out to me is the more positive approach to things like social media. Because often so much of the discourse around it is about the toxicity element, how much that it can be negative, but there's so much power for good there as well that's often seen as a bit of balance. So
you know, there's an analogy that I love to use when I do my talks about technology. I like to remind people that it's just a hammer. So what does that mean? Think, a hammer is neutral. A hammer doesn't care whether you break a window or build a house. What the hammer achieves is related to the skillfulness and the intention of the carpenter. What it is that when we look at how we've been using our technology, we've been breaking a lot of windows. And the question becomes, how do we over time and in community learn how to use our technology so that we are breaking fewer windows and building more houses? And of course, here, we're talking about the contest of building the house of our health. So this is what we, right? Because the technology doesn't care. We have to care. And in our caring, we have to learn how to develop different skills, different attitudes, and different practices so that we can say that, you know, I'm well, I'm preventing illness, and the technologies that I have, my smartphone, my smartwatch, my laptop, my virtual reality, my social media, my digital channels like YouTube and TikTok, I've learned how to use all of those things to actually make myself and my community more healthy rather than going down the rabbit hole of, you know, depression and anxiety and, at the worst, suicide.
Go on from there. You've mentioned previously about the importance of leaders modeling healthy technology habits for teams. What can leaders such as yourself do to integrate mindful technology into leadership styles?
So what is practicing the five pillars? The leader's influence is most prevalent in behavior, not in talking. If I just, as a leader, show up for people where I am actively practicing and occasionally mentioning the five pillars, so what did that look like? I get 7+ hours of sleep a night, and I take naps to support that during the day, right? I have a plant-based diet that minimizes the intake of ultra-processed foods, right? I practice movement. I work standing up during the day for periods of time. And often when I have live meetings, I do walking meetings. So let's not sit in the office. Let's go for a walk. I've had a couple of bosses throughout my career where they would say that. When I have a meeting, let's go for a walk. Let's just walk and talk with one another, right? Rather than sitting behind a desk. When it comes to relaxation, I practice breathing and silence and deep listening. And especially when situations become tense and emotional and stressful. When it comes to relationships, I practice constructive conflict and emotional co-regulation. If more leaders committed themselves to showing up, actively practicing these five pillars on an ongoing basis, what does that do? Well, as human beings, we look at leaders and then we model them. Not everybody, but a greater number of us, if we saw our leaders being more healthy and how they go about their lives, and then we modeled that, that then has this effect, right? Where a greater number of workers and citizens model the same thing, and then we all become generally more healthy. Throughout my career, which has spanned a bit more than 30 years in life sciences and in higher education, the times when I have probably been most healthy is when I have worked for a boss where I could see that they were conducting themselves in a healthy manner and they would subtly encourage me to be safe. So that's what I think leaders can most do. But I'm also afraid that we as leaders don't do enough on a regular basis.
Talk a little bit more about change and change that you've delivered, especially in healthcare and life sciences. How do you navigate such a regulated environment to try and make change in the space? And what are the unique challenges that come up in such a sector? And what can other industries learn from that?
For much of my career, I have worked in change leadership roles within organizations. And there are a few lessons that kind of come immediately to mind when I think about this. Regulations that come from the government that are influenced by various stakeholders really drive our priorities around investment and practice. So one of the things that I've learned in this regard is that we have to continually detect the intersection between regulatory evolution and organizational opportunity. Because regulation changes the environment, and then the opportunity that comes of that, as well as threat at times, is what we are constantly responding to. We use this change or this evolution as a way of creating a sense of urgency. So, you know, John Cotter, he is the father of change management, Harvard Business School, who wrote the famous article some decades ago, "Why Do 70% of Change Projects Fail?" That's the title of the article, right? Then he goes on to talk about the 8 things that any change leader needs to pay attention to if they are going to be the 30% that succeed versus the 70% that fail. And the first thing he talks about is that if you don't have a sense of urgency in the organization and the group on a line of part to change, then nothing will succeed. Because we as human beings are naturally complacent. And if I'm comfortable and there is not some threat or opportunity that makes me sit up and say, okay, we better do something different, and where I personally don't see the payoff for that change, then what I will tend to do is to, okay, let me just sit here and see how this works, but I'm not going to participate and cooperate. And so everything starts with a sense of urgency. Using regulatory evolution that can get us an opportunity or protect us from the threat as a way of creating a sense of urgency that allows us then to be responsive to emerging crisis, that's a key. Huge key. But which is so often underestimated in organizational life. Why? Because especially if an organization is successful, we become complacent and we really don't want to change. And by the way, that you can see that in organizations, in societies, in communities, in households, and in individuals. It's consistent, right? When do people make the most change individually? When they get a life-threatening illness. You can talk to a person for years, right, about you need to practice the 5 pillars. That's shorthand, right? Oh, no, I don't need to eat well. I don't need to get enough sleep. I don't need to treat people well, you know, become more skillful in relationships. But then let the doctor say, well, Craig, you've got a terminal illness and you've got 9 months to live. Now, I'm trying to change. I'm rushing now, sense of urgency. I'm being vegetarian. I'm going to go for a walk 20 minutes every day. I'm going to call up my relatives and ask them to forgive me. And can we get together and have coffee? And it's really unfortunate, but that's what drives us as human beings. So
going a little bit more of that sort of realm of advice, what advice do you have for organizations who are looking to foster the resilience and sustainability in their own workforce?
So one, rationalize the link between resilience and sustainability and business performance. It is very difficult for any organization to focus on abstract concepts like sustainability and resilience if there is not a clear understanding of how that is going to drive the outcomes that the organization wants to achieve. Once that link is established, leaders, as we said before, then need to model that link So when I show up as a leader and I'm behaving and talking with my teams, I need to be prepared to say, generally, we should practice these five pillars, which is going to make us more resilient and sustainable, which is going to allow us to get that revenue, control those costs, achieve that profit margin, show up well for our customers, be compliant with government regulation, whatever that goal happens to be. If we're not constantly establishing that we cannot deliver our business results if we are not healthy and resilient and sustainable, then it gets lost, right? So you establish the link, you model it as a leader, and then you actively reward and recognize people in the organization for complying and following through with that, all right? So people need to see that my peers that are most resilient and sustainable as a function of keeping themselves healthy and contributing to the health of others are the ones that get promoted, get the raises, get the bonuses, get the best projects, get the accolades. And then when people see that, then we all respond to that. That's what reward and recognition is, right? Is we respond to that by saying, well, if that's what they're doing that makes for success, that the organization is willing to reward, then I better work on doing the same. So that's the insight that I offer regarding that. Again, easy to say, very difficult to do. But alas, not impossible.
That brings us to the end of our sort of main body of questions. It's a quick fire round, so quick kicking us off. So don't know if you're much of a cook, but what is the sort of signature dish that you use to impress friends or family? I feel like everyone has something up their sleeve.
I'm not a cook at all, but I'm the other side of the equation. I'm the eater of the cooking, and I help the cook to feel better. That's my role in the ecosystem. So I have to tell you, I lived for 3 years in Singapore, and I became entirely enamored of Malaysian, Chinese, Southeast Asian cuisine. And so whenever people would come to visit me in Singapore, it's not as easy to find here back in the United States, is chili crab and pepper crab. Those are the two signature dishes that I would most, and then a bit more humble would be kaya toast. So kaya is this kind of coconut jam that's very popular in Southeast Asia that you put on bread. It's kind of, no, it's, you know, you have lemon curd, which is very popular in the UK. Imagine like a coconut curd, and that's really what kaya is, right? So you eat that on toast, and then you, with it, you have teh halia, which is ginger tea. It's like a milk tea that's infused with ginger. So that's like a standard kind of breakfast and snack throughout the day. So it's those three dishes that I would most try to impress people with when they would...
All of them sound fantastic, yeah. To be honest. Right? The next one for you is, in another life, what do you think that your career would be?
It would be much the same as it is in this life. So, you know, I very much inherit the archetype of the sea. I'm a lifelong learner, teacher, advisor. And that's much of what my consulting is now. I am the king's advisor. I am Gandalf, Merlin, Obi-Wan Kenobi, right? And that is the role in organizations and situations where I am most effective and comfortable. And so, you know, if there's such a thing as a past life, I like to believe that I did that before, and in another life, I wouldn't be doing that. That is my role in the concept.
Speaking of that cycle, what is the best sort of piece of advice that you've ever been given?
To be of loving service.
Succinct. I love it.
That's it. To be of loving service. Exactly. That in whatever you do, make sure that there is an element of love and of service. That if you can find that as an underlying element to whatever you do, then that thing that you do will be worth. But of course, if you don't find the element of love and service in whatever you're doing, then you should be questioning whether and why or how you are factoring. So I found that to be a really good North Star. I mean, I lose my way quite often, as you can imagine. But when I reconsider that piece of advice, it then helps me to reorient myself, you know, quite well.
No, that's wonderful advice. And that leads us quite nicely into our last question. So it's a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the weirdest. How weird are you, Craig?
I'm pretty consistently a 7.5. Yes. 7.5, right? So I'm always working on kind of the front edge, the vanguard of habits and practices. I guess I have a bit of a futurist in me, but I've also been able to find a way to apply that. And I mean, look, I worked in life sciences pharma, which is far and away one of the most conservative, highly regulated, buttoned up industries that exist, right? And I've been able to play a role that I'm very proud of helping conservative organizations and leaders to understand how they could responsibly and compliantly, because remember, regulated industry, take advantage of whatever is emerging in the area of technology in order to benefit their customers, their stakeholders, their employees. So that's how I ended up in a career as a digital health innovator. And I continue to do that work today.
And here we are today. That's a great place to leave it. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and talk to me, Craig. I really appreciate
it. Thank you. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure, really has.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.